I'm Jane Johnson, and you're listening to the Careering into Motherhood podcast, a series of insightful interviews with real women who tell their real life stories as working mothers. We don't preach, we definitely don't have all the answers, but we do offer different perspectives. For details about all the other support we offer, please visit www.careeringintomotherhood.com. My guest today is Kitty Dimbleby. She's a well-known and very successful journalist, but she was born with a condition called Hirschsprung's disease, which is a disorder of the abdomen, and it meant that throughout her childhood she suffered chronic pain and went through far too many excruciating operations for a young girl. During this very difficult time, as Kitty will tell us, she found poetry to be a real comfort to her. I came across her Instagram profile, at Kitty Dimbleby, because she'd begun to publish some of the poems she had started to write recently about the everyday trials of being a mum, a working mum, during the pandemic. And as poetry is something that I've always loved, but also found a little bit intimidating, when I read some of Kitty's work, it was so gentle, but also raw at the same time. And there was a hint of humour in some of what she wrote. So I invited her onto the podcast to talk about poetry and how it can help us during times of great emotion, whether that's stress or happiness or whatever it may be. Have a listen to our conversation and do give Kitty a follow on Instagram.
Well, I've always loved poetry, and actually it goes back to when I was very sick as a teenager and in and out of hospital, and very, you know, obviously there weren't iPads and iPhones then, so bedridden and without a TV in my room, or in hospital without a TV, but without quite the brain power to read books, I turned to poetry. And I used to read anthologies by Daisy Goodwin, almost like a sort of self-help book of poetry. So I've got them here, 101 poems that could save your life, 100 poems to get you through the day and night. And they were categorised, a bit like the Bible, I think, used to be categorised. So you can go to find verses, and poetry became my salvation then. And I've always loved it. And people always ask me for recommendations for poems for weddings and funerals and christenings and whatever occasion. And for the last few years, I've written my own sort of, I call them my silly little verses for weddings, and people seem to really like them. I did them for a wedding recently. So my only New Year's resolution was to read poetry every day. And my brain seems to be back to where it was when I was a teenager, in that I've got the attention span. I haven't got much attention span, and my health is, again, not brilliant, but poetry is accessible and manageable in small bites. So I've been using it and sharing it, and people have been responding to that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I know, as I say, that's certainly how I came across you. I don't know how. I think Instagram suggested you, you know, when it gives you suggestions. And I mean, what is it? Do you think that's really interesting, actually, that concept of, you know, attention spans? And I know you're obviously a working mother as well. And I don't know, personally, I think this lockdown feels so much harder than the first for a whole variety of reasons. And that attention span is just so squeezed and so pressurized. And then I have got the biggest pile of books by my bed right now, because I keep buying these books thinking, yeah, I really want to read this. I really want to read it. And we're in lockdown. Surely I've got loads of time to read, and it's just not happening. But poetry, what is it about poetry that is, in such a short space of time, is so sort of nourishing for the soul, if that doesn't sound so cheesy?
Well, no, it's not. I've got the same thing. I've got a pile of books and I just can't. Bizarrely, the minute I go away, I can read. But at the moment, I might find myself rewatching rubbish television on my iPad instead of reading in bed. But the poetry, I put them by they're piled up next to the bed, and I have to just grab one and read. And it is nourishing for the soul. It's people who have chosen these words, and there is comfort in them. And it's brief, like most are a page long. And you can go to quite old school poetry or really modern stuff. And then, I mean, I think the most classic recent example is Amanda Gorman, who has inspired the world with her beautiful poem. And the last lines of there is always light. If only we are brave enough to see it, there is light. They make me weep. And I'm not American, but it spoke to all of us. In fact, this beautiful 22-year-old young girl stood up and spoke like that. But if you think song lyrics are poetry, all of it is it that, you know, there is some ways people write, like Matt Haig, when he writes about mental health,
yes,
poetic style. It is nourishing to the soul by its very design. And my silly rhyming poems I've written, I'm trying to do one a week about life in lockdown as a parent, and people seem to enjoy them because it's just getting to the point that this is quite a tough time. And I write newspaper articles, and I've written a book, so I've written 70,000 words, so writing a 70-word poem is much quicker and immediate, but you have to hone the language. So I suppose you're sort of getting to the crux of the issue quicker.
Faster, yes, yes, that's really, really interesting. So I gather that you said you've recently been commissioned to write a poem, is that right?
Well, yes, again, through Instagram, somebody I used to work with, a journalist, saw my poems, and the Blue Cross Animal Charity was looking for someone to write a Valentine's love poem to be read by a selection of celebrities, each reading a few lines, that would sound like it was to a lover or loved one, but it was actually to their pet. So it was quite a fun challenge because it was five different celebrities with their animals and trying to get the personalities and references to them. And I'm not claiming in any way it's great poetry or literary, but it's people seem to really like it. And it was a great thrill to have Bill Bailey reading my words. And it was Anton de Beck, the opera singer, Russell Watson, Geordie Porter, who's a lovely actress who I actually knew already. And she very sweetly reposted it and gave me the credit. So it was lovely, and people commenting, I love this, how I feel about my animal. This is how I'm just feeling like, yeah, I get a byline in a national newspaper and people like that, but hitting someone with a poem reaching someone with a poem has been very satisfying.
Yes, I'm sure. You know, I think poetry has had the same kind of aura around it as opera, for example, and previously been pretty inaccessible. And as you say, you know, the US election ceremony or the presidential ceremony, that suddenly brought poetry to the masses. But I mean, how do you go about it? So we've got some listeners who are sort of thinking, actually, yeah, I wouldn't mind trying my hand at just writing a few lines. What do you do? How do you get started on that creative process?
I've actually just signed up to do a City University online poetry course starting at the end of the month to learn more about it, because it honestly just started with a friend's hen do 4 years ago, and I was thinking about them as a couple and started rhyming, and mine's a very traditional verse, so it's four lines each verse, and the middle line and the last line have the rhyming last word, and the beat of the words has to match, and you have to know. I always thought I could only do it if I knew people really well, but because I've just done it for some celebrities I don't know and their dogs, I realised I can actually make it work. But just do it, just write. With any writing, the only way to do it is to just put words on paper, even if you think they're utter crap, just do it. And my verses about lockdown, I shared on my mum's WhatsApp we've got called Homeschool Hell. And they all said, Kitty, you must share that. So then I was brave enough to put it on my Instagram, and then it's led to more conversations. And then alongside my Instagram, when I share a photo, I normally do a poem that is spoken to me that day by a real poet. And people are really enjoying those and saying, I've got a friend who's a consultant anaesthetist, clinical director at a hospital that's been really badly hit, dealing with stuff that I can't even begin to imagine. I sent her a book of poetry, which is an anthology called She Is Fierce, which is brave, bold and beautiful poems by women. And then she loves seeing poems on my Instagram. And she says, thank you for introducing me to this medium. And she's a scientist, I'm a creative. We were at school together and we're living this very separate life. But she's finding poetry a support in this time, and she's living through the pandemic in a way that I can't even begin to comprehend. And the fact that she never thought poetry was for her. But by sharing little ones on Instagram alongside a photo, as I hope, I've got 1,800 followers, but people seem to be really enjoying it. I'm enjoying giving them access.
Yes, yes, certainly. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Because poetry and the image, so almost Instagram seems sort of perfectly positioned to help get poetry out to more people. You know, I don't know how many characters you have in an Instagram post, but it's short, isn't it? And so it's almost poetic in itself if you can write properly.
I've always said on my Instagram I'm all about the caption, and then I've felt very bleak this January and February, very, very bleak. And so I was reading the poetry and poems I found comforting, or poems that actually just articulated how bleak I felt. I sort of found that helpful. I mean, there were days when I was just sobbing at the kids' schools being closed, the challenges of that, and the fear and the anxiety, and it'd been nearly a year of this relentless worry. But this was giving me a creative outlet. The poetry, reading it, sharing it, writing it has really helped and sort of dragged me back from the precipice. And homeschooling my daughter, she had to write a poem about stars, and it was such fun doing it with her and talking to her about rhymes. She's eight, and talking to her about rhymes and beats and reading her some grown-up poems and reading her poems for kids and ones. And that was, really our favourite homeschool lesson. Her used at this age is also good. And I know that friends have shared poems I've told them about with their offspring as well.
Yes. How old are your children?
Louise 8 and Max is 5. So Max is in reception, so I can't really get him to do anything. Chloe's 8 and very conscientious and loves school and is desperate to get back. And then I also have unfortunately, my health isn't very good. Again, I've struggled most of my life, but it's bad at the moment. And there's not much support out there for obvious reasons. So I am quite unwell a few times a week. And the kids are amazing with that. But the struggles of, homeschool, trying to work and be creative, and the health. And the poetry it's my therapy.
Are your children doing kind of online live lessons or...?
My son has a teeny bit, but my daughter has a couple of 20-minute lessons a day, but it's us doing it. We're trying to focus more on getting them outside and going for walks, but it's hard when it's cold and miserable. I spent 3 hours this morning in the park, so I'm sort of still frozen to the core. I think it's difficult because we want to do the set curriculum, but actually Chloe and I will have a much better day if we were to look at a poem and then do some drawings to go with it and think outside the box, but there's a pressure to conform as a parent.
There is, there really is, yeah. And it's caused so much stress. I have one child who's 6, and he, point blank, not refuses, but he gets so stressed by it, just because this is not his usual learning environment. And me sitting him at a table and saying, right, now you need to do whatever it is, number bonds or whatever, is just completely alien to him.
Also, we're trying to be mum, teacher, friend, everything to them, and it's impossible. And I'm very lucky that I don't like to say I'm very lucky. My husband and I are a team, and he parents, and it's not luck. He's as much their parent as I am. Women are always meant to say, I'm so lucky, my husband's so good, so helpful. No, my husband parents his children. But he steps up and he'll take time out of his work and then work in evenings, and I do the same. And I've actually got quite a lot of work, having the irony, because I made a vow that I wasn't going to let my health impact my work anymore from January. So I did it. So I've got to try and write about 3 commissions this week while they're off, because it's impossible to get much done through school. But that's the juggle the juggle is always huge for working parents. But I think the juggle of homeschooling is a whole new level. But writing those little the poems that I write, I normally write on my nights I'm not very well and I'm up in pain, and it's a sort of distraction. So that's my... And then when I did the big commissioned one for the Blue Cross charity, I did a spider diagram of words and thoughts and rhyming words. I had pairs. But when they're ones that are from my soul of what I'm feeling at that moment, it's kind of a middle of the night on my phone tapping away.
Am I right in thinking you're also into outdoor swimming? Is it? Are you into the cold stuff?
Yes, bizarrely, I'm always someone that swam in cold water, but then not as an adult. But when I was younger, I used to. And then this time a year ago, so before COVID, I went to Devon to visit my paternal grandfather who was in a nursing home. And at the same time, my beloved godson was having a very serious operation. And I suddenly was overwhelmed by this urge to jump in the sea. So the friend I was staying with said, well, let's do it. And we drove to the beach. I borrowed a swimsuit and I ran into the sea. And then I decided I would keep it up. And we had all these amazing plans for last year, like so many people did. We were, my husband and I were traveling. We were both 40 and, of course, couldn't do anything. But as soon as I was allowed even to go anywhere, I started swimming and I just kept going. And I go about 3 times a week now to a lake nearby. And I've smashed the ice to get in.
Oh, my gosh, have you? Make me feel cold just thinking about it.
It's a natural high. I don't recommend doing it unless you've built up and read up on it and looked into it. But I love it. It's sort of an endorphins rush, and I have to take morphine on the days I'm not very well, oral morphine. And it is the best way of clearing the morphine hangover. And apparently it's a good way of clearing a real hangover.
Which, of course, we wouldn't know anything about those.
No. Actually, I haven't drank this lockdown. Again, I've been too miserable to risk. So it sounds very dramatic. I think everyone's been miserable, but for me, alcohol is a thing of celebration. So I haven't felt like it.
Yeah. It's been so hard. So on the cold water bathing, whatever it's called, do you follow this guy called, is it the Dutch Wim Hof?
Wim Hof. I do, but actually there's the local trainer from my gym, the guy that runs my gym, who is brilliant. He does lots of cold water swimming, and he's taught me all about it, and I follow him. He's very handsome, 34-year-old, so he's great following on Instagram.
If you're going to follow someone, you might as well make it someone like that.
And he's great, and he's been really supportive and giving me advice. And actually, he runs an Instagram account for men called Icebreakers, which is to help men while swimming, but also talking about mental health. And they want me to maybe do a version. But the thing is, women talk anyway. We communicate. We don't even jump in cold water to do it. We just naturally. With my crazy sister-in-law, and we meet and we're socially distanced, but I get to see her face and be away from the kids. And we have a hot chocolate afterwards and we laugh at our craziness, and the whole experience is just brilliant.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Just these tiniest things. Who'd have thought? I won't keep you much longer. You say that you do writing. It's offers some relief when you are in pain, in physical pain. And I know they say that singing and music has actively shown, they've done scientific studies that it actively works like a pain relief, like an analgesic. And I'm wondering if you think poetry does the same, or is it just that it provides a distraction for your brain?
It's a distraction. I mean, when I was in hospital as a teenager, they would do pain therapy where someone would come and talk to you, and they would get you to get yourself to a happy place and go into that sort of, try and get yourself out of your body almost, and the physical pain, and think. And I suppose it does help in that way. And actually, my cousin, I've got a wonderful cousin who's a musician, singer, the most brilliant singer. I mean, I will listen to her music sometimes, and her songs are poetry, really. And it is definitely something that listening to music helps me a lot in pain. I suppose writing is a form of that. And I've only just got back to feeling properly creative. And she always told me very wisely, and now it seems, you won't really get your creative spark back until your youngest child starts school. And of course, my youngest has started school during a global pandemic, but she was right. It's definitely something, as I'm being able to step away a little bit from the mother role and come back to me, maybe. I don't quite know how to express it.
No, I know exactly what you mean.
And poetry for stages of life, we touched on the beginning of grief and of love. And in these books, which I can't recommend enough, a book called A Poem for Every Day of the Year, Poem for Every Night of the Year anthologies, the Daisy Goodwins are brilliant. You can get them secondhand on Amazon. There's a poem for every feeling out there, like every song. You know, everyone has their song they put on in the car when they're angry or they're happy or they're excited. And at the moment, I'm addicted to listening to Bitch by Meredith Brooks. And the opening line is, I hate the world today. And so whenever I'm in a really bad mood in the kitchen, I put it on full volume and sing along. But there's a poem for everything. And you can just, once you have enough of them, it's like having your own little sort of sweetie jar of something you can go in for every mood and find comfort. I remember studying Sylvia Plath, and the only happy poetry she wrote was about her motherhood, about being a mum. Her poem about having her baby for the first time is one of the most beautiful poems. Love set you going like a fat gold clock. But yeah, there's a poem for everything. And actually, my grandfather passed away last week, and it was 99. It's not a tragedy. It's a good thing. But I said to my mum, we're going to have a funeral of six of us, but I want to find a poem for him. And if I can't, I'm going to try and write one. But I'm finding it harder than I would have thought. But it's a way of, I want to sort of honour him in that way.
Yes, I'm sure. My mother had left this list of music and poetry that were readings that she wanted. And this particular poem, when I read it, it's so her. It's so, you know, I see her not in a different light, but that she felt this way. It's called The Road Not Travelled by Robert Frost.
Absolutely love that poem.
And it just, you know, I never really thought that she looked upon her life like that. But now I've read that poem, I'm, you know, sort of even more in awe of her. And I can see so many of the decisions she made, you know, with that filter. So it's very helpful in the grieving process.
Really, yeah, it really is. And it's been the other side effect of being a child and teenager who's unwell a lot is you go to a lot more funerals before most people do. So I said, thinking about my grandfather, I am sad, but it's a very different kind of grief, because I'm used to funerals where it's a young person or when the coffin is too small for it to be bearable. And I remember poetry getting me through that. And it's going to feel, it makes my voice wobble now thinking about it. But it was in those days as a teenager when I was learning everything far too quickly that poetry kept me upright. And I'm so just very happy that in my fourth decade or my fifth decade, I'm 41. I've discovered it.
Sorry, I'm in mine as well. Nearly in my sixth.
I don't think I am in any way in the league of the poems that I adore, but I'm happy that some friends and people I don't know on Instagram are finding joy in my sort of simple verses.
Well, we definitely are. So as I say, that's where I came to you. So thank you very much, and please keep going, because you know, you tell it like it is. There are some highs and some lows in the poetry of yours that I've read. So
thank you, and thank you so much for asking me to come onto this podcast. I'm very flattered, very pleased.
Thank you to Kitty, and don't forget you can give her a follow at Kitty Dimbleby over on Instagram. And of course, if you want any poetry, if you've got any commissions, I'm sure she would be very happy to oblige. You can contact her again through Instagram. Regular listeners to this podcast will know that my mother was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer nearly 3 years ago now. She sadly passed away on the 13th of February, and I'm dedicating this episode to her. I will be taking a couple of weeks out just to think about the future of this podcast and whether I can keep it going without a sponsor. If you know anyone, please let me know. One of my mother's favourite poems was The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost, and on that I'm going to sign out. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both. And be one traveller, long I stood, and looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay, in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference.